I think I know why we're headed toward a fiscal cliff. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
And you know, I think I have a pretty fair idea of why we're going over the fiscal cliff as well.
Yeah, I do believe so. You know, Chuck, that's been pretty much the only talk. If you tune into any of the political news shows, or if you listen to the talking heads at CNN, Fox, MSNBC, and even the conservative talk, Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck, etc., Sean Hannity, it's all fiscal cliff, fiscal cliff, fiscal cliff. Well, Chuck, we've got to figure out for folks why we seem to be having such trouble keeping our house in order. Why our oikonomos, or our house law, our economy, is failing so miserably. And you and I have been doing a little bit of backgrounding on this. And no, ladies and gentlemen, we're not going to bore you to death by getting into all the micromanaging details of how our economy works. But we're going to give you an overview of one major area of, well, what we consider to be a significant structural weakness in the American economy. And Chuck, I think I don't overstate the case now, do I?
Oh, I don't think so, although I think the idea that you and I could give a micro-detailed explanation of how the economy works, I'm not sure I could. Maybe you could.
Well, that's the reason why we would call in people like Dr. Sasha Volokord, who's a professor of economics and a good friend of ours, to weigh in on this issue. And we might have him on a later program to talk about some of the micro details of the economy.
Yeah, I know it from a 25,000-foot level. If you want me to start doing details, thank you. I'm a trained biochemist, not an economist. However, I am a student of the Austrian School of Economics, so I do understand the Austrian business cycle. And I also understand the Keynesian business theory, and frankly, the Keynesian theory doesn't work, never has worked, and yet we are doing what an insane man does. If you recall, I believe it was Albert Einstein who said something like, insanity is defined as doing the same thing over and over and over again.
Doing the same way you've always done it, or doing the same thing you've always done in the same way that you've always done it, and expecting a different result.
That's it.
Well,
and we continue to make the same mistakes, and that's going to come out in this article. We continue to make these goofy mistakes because let's get down to presuppositions here. There are two major theories on how our economy should work. Two major theories at play here. There are more than two that actually should be looked at. But right now we have two, and those two are both wrong. If you want to, because they're both based on a false assumption, and that is the assumption that it's government that stimulates the economy.
Well,
it's government spending,
Chuck,
that stimulates the economy.
I do believe that that's what our current administration believes. That's where we have things like stimulus programs and corporate bailouts and subsidized housing and other things like that. Isn't that where government comes in and they help our economy?
Well, of course, it really does nothing except provide a, well, quote unquote, the safety net really isn't a safety net at all. What it does is it says that you really should be taken care of by the government. It telegraphs a message that you are a government, and actually what it's saying is that the government owns you and they will be happy to put you up in housing and provide this and that and another thing as long as you agree to certain rules regarding surrenders of your liberty.
Well, yes, Chuck, and that's true. And I think the one area where we can really point to as we're talking about this fiscal cliff issue, where government is stepping in, is in the area of providing jobs. You know?
Yes.
Government's providing jobs. And we say this, ladies and gentlemen, and I think this is a very lovely picture of why things are so totally haywire in the American economy. And this is from an article by Terrence Jeffrey of CNSnews.com, who was written on the 7th of December. Now, you know, it's a few days old, but we came across it over the weekend. And okay, I think even though he's just reporting some numbers from the Bureau of Labor Statistics at the U.S. Department of Labor, he is really hitting on something that, honestly, ladies and gentlemen, is showing a fundamental structural weakness in our economy. And the title of his article is 73%, let that number sink in for a minute, 73% of new jobs created in the last 5 months are in government. Yes, you heard me. Three quarters of the new jobs created in this country in the last 5 months have been government jobs. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, not private sector jobs, government sector jobs, which means they're paid for by what, Charles?
Taxes.
They're paid for by taxes. So, you know, this argument was, and I thought, I laughed about this because it was the first thing that came to my mind when I saw this article, Chuck, was that if you start criticizing this, immediately the public employees unions, like the SEIU and others, who are ones who are helping make sure that government's getting the massive number of jobs in the country, would argue, well, we pay our taxes too. Well, Chuck, that's kind of a false starter, because they're paying their taxes, their personal income taxes, with our tax dollars.
That's right.
Because they're not earning, they're not, wealth is not being created by a government job, unlike a private sector who's producing a good or a service, creating a profit, paying employees, and thus stimulating the economy by increasing the tax base. These folks are getting paid by our taxes in the form of their quote-unquote salaries, and then they're remitting back some of those taxes to government. Now, somebody argue, well, then at least we don't have to pay as many taxes. Sure, we do, because...
Yeah, of course we do. Yeah.
Because those government union jobs are all going to be at a higher rate than probably the free market would provide for those type of jobs.
Well, think about it, too. What happens in a government job? You take the employee on for life.
Yes.
We pay their retirement.
Yes.
We pay their medical benefit.
That's right.
We pay benefit after benefit after benefit. And the fact is that you and I, the average Joe, cannot afford the benefit package that is handed out willy-nilly to government employees. Now, by the way, I did a quick calculation based on the numbers in this article, Barry.
Uh-huh.
142,415,000 people were employed in the U.S. according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. 19,938,000 of those were in some form of government employment. In other words, state, local, federal, post office, name it.
That's about 13% of the U.S. workforce.
Probably closer to 13.7% of the U.S. workforce employed by government.
Okay, but that also means, Chuck, that for every, now in the last 5 month period, and that's a snapshot they're looking at here, that for every four jobs that were created in the United States, three of them were government sector jobs, which means three of them are getting paid for by the fourth one.
That's right.
Okay, and ladies and gentlemen, you figure out the math yourself. Do you think that that's sustainable?
Well, think about this, Barry. I believe that the ratio is for every government job created, two or three, I can't remember the number, two or three in the private sector disappear because of the taxation that has to be raised in order to pay for that employee.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, it's interesting also, Chuck, that in the same article, they talked that what we have here, because that was in, that 142 million was in June. Now, from June until November, according to the statistics, we've got an increase in the growth of jobs, 143,262,000, which is an overall increase of 847,000 jobs in 6 months since June. However, that number includes 621,000 new government jobs, bringing government-related jobs to 20,559,000. That's 73.3% of the new jobs created overall since June have been in the government sector. Now, Charles, one of the things that you got to think about here is another number, the total U.S. population. And as of today, according to the United States Census Bureau, the resident population of the United States projected to today is 314,916,168 people. So probably by the time that we get to the point where people hear this program tonight, be around 314,920,000. So what we're dealing with, ladies and gentlemen, is, now let's go back to the other number we talked about. There's 143,262,000 actual jobs that the Bureau of Labor Statistics is showing in the economy. Well, folks, if you do the math, you know that 143 million is less than 50% of 315 million.
Right.
You'd have to have 157,500,000 jobs in order just to say that there's one job for every two people in the United States. But we're at 143,262,000. Chuck, we've got more people who, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, are not working than are working in this country, which means to start with, the people who are working are providing for 2.4 people per job, okay? Then you take the number of government sector jobs, which is 20 million. Let's take that off. So you've only got about 122 million people providing for 315 million. It's almost one job is providing for three people in the economy, okay?
Let's take a look at something, though, real quick. That used to work in this economy, and think about the reason why. You had a father who worked and a mother and the children who did not work, did not have to have employment in order
they didn't work to, they didn't work outside the home, but they might have had a family,
they worked
supplemental
inside.
Business, etc. Yes.
Let's not start a firefight by saying that women who stay at home and work aren't working.
They work much harder sometimes than those who don't.
Yeah. The father earned a decent enough living that the mother also benefited by the fact that she didn't have to work outside the home. She may have done something inside the home, made little things, or babysat, or whatever. But that, even in the past, that hasn't always been the case. By the way, just another little statistic to throw at you. Since June, the percentage of people employed by the federal government has jumped from that 13.7 figure that we talked about to 14.3%
exactly.
of the population. That is not a sustainable growth.
No, it's not. But you know what it does do, Chuck? You look at a 5-month period during a presidential election year, it buys all the votes.
Well, it bought at least 847,000 votes.
Yes. Well, at least 621,000 who were government-related jobs. Now, I know we'll probably get yelled at because some of those people will be like, well, I work for the government, but I'm a conservative, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, overall, going out and giving these jobs in government is a way to get people's loyalty to the government that's in power at the time. In other words, well, we can't vote so-and-so out because I might lose my job because of they may change the budget.
Well, Barry, I'm going to bring up a fact that we've talked about this idea of government support, and we'll see who the real conservatives are when people start talking about cutting Medicare and Social Security. And what's the first bite I got off that in Facebook? Somebody came out and said, well, that's not really socialism. And I'm like, well, yes, it is. They don't call it Social Security because it isn't socialist. The fact is that that is a socialist retirement program. Now, everybody has paid into it. But the fact is, folks, if you had been required by law, let's say the state that you lived in, let's say Ohio required you to put that money in an individual retirement account and not touch it until you were 65 or 62 or whatever.
Sure.
How much more money do you think you have than you get from Social Security?
Probably the percentages would be mind-numbing to people. They'd realize just exactly what's being stolen from them.
First of all, yeah, there would be millions of dollars in everyone's retirement account if they worked their entire lives. And I mean literally millions and millions.
Certainly.
That money would then be available for investment because the IRAs generally go on something like you put it into bonds or you put it into stock or some kind of blue chip stock, that kind of thing.
Well, and even more importantly, Chuck, that money would be available for inheritance.
Exactly.
People could pass on something of value to the next generation without government coming in and saying, we'll decide for you who gets what.
Exactly, Barry. And the fact is there are people that die and their families can collect some niggling little portion of their Social Security.
They call it a death benefit, which to me is somewhat macabre and a little distasteful to call it a benefit when somebody dies. But that's
exactly
what government thinks.
As always in these things, Barry, the more you look into these little things, it grows into bigger and bigger and bigger things. The fact is that we've got people arguing over, I actually had a survey today, would you be willing to pay more in taxes if the deficit were reduced? Barry, that is the biggest bait and switch tactic that has been used, and I've seen it used now over and over and over. During the Bush tax increase in 1990, if you recall, we were going to raise tax rates because it was going to reduce the deficit. Did it reduce the deficit? No.
How'd that work out for us? Yeah.
Yeah. The new revenue got spent. Now, I actually heard somebody this weekend talk about Arthur Laffer as being one of the people, maybe if you've ever heard of the Laffer curve, what it basically says is that really quick, because we're almost out of time. But what it says is if you cut marginal rates of taxes, you will get a revenue increase because people will then be able to keep more of their money and they will invest it. That's what they called trickle-down economics, and people made fun of it. And here's the problem. It worked. The fact is that within 2 years of the marginal tax rate cuts in the 1980s, revenue doubled at the federal level. What did Congress do? Did Congress pay down the deficit?
Of course not.
They rubbed their hands together and said, look at all this new money.
We've got to spend this, yes.
We've got to spend this. That's right. So it didn't reduce the deficit, and they increased spending, which is why the government grew under Ronald Reagan. Barry, this is what we have to fight. Now, unfortunately, we're out of time. Join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.